All right, everyone, buckle up, because today we're diving deep into a case that's going to make you think twice about those terms and conditions we all love to ignore. It's Ionix, Inc. v. Elmwood Sensors, Inc.
Yeah, this one's a classic. A real battle of the forms showdown.
So to set the scene, we've got Ionix making water dispensers, and they buy like a gazillion thermostats from Elmwood.
16,000 to be exact. And it seems pretty straightforward at first, you know, one company needs parts, the other supplies them, standard business stuff.
Right, until those thermostats allegedly decide to turn into tiny little fire hazards.
Yeah, suddenly we're not just talking about faulty parts, we're talking about who's legally responsible when things go up in smoke. Yeah. Literally.
Okay, so product liability issue, got it. But what really makes this case spicy is what Elmwood tries to pull when Ionix decides to sue.
Oh yeah, they went digging through their legal toolbox and pulled out this limited liability clause, basically trying to say, whoops, not our problem if our thermostats go haywire.
Sneaky, sneaky. So both companies, they both had their own standard forms with, you know, all the legal jargon. And surprise, surprise, the terms clash. Ionix wants the usual legal remedies, you know, for defective products. Meanwhile, Elmwood's over there trying to build a legal fortress to protect themselves from any liability.
Classic battle of the form scenario. It happens all the time in business. And the big question is, whose terms actually win? Is it a free-for-all where the most aggressive language wins?
Right. You'd think it'd be like the Wild West of contracts, but thankfully there are rules to this game.
Exactly. Enter the Uniform Commercial Code, or UCC. For all you acronym lovers. And specifically, we're talking about UCC section 2207. It's like the rule book for figuring out whose terms actually govern the contract when the forms clash.
All right, break it down for us. What does this magical section actually say?
Well, think of 2207 in like three parts. First, 2207 basically says, look, a contract can still happen even if the acceptance has different terms than the original offer.
Makes sense. I mean, businesses negotiate, things change, right?
Exactly. But there's a catch, a big one. If one side specifically says, hey, my acceptance depends on you agreeing to my version of the terms and nothing else, then it's not a done deal until that happens.
Ah, so it's like a take it or leave it power move.
You got it. And then we move on to 2207.2. This part deals with those extra terms that sneak into the acceptance. It says those can become part of the contract, but unless they significantly change the deal.
So no slipping in something crazy at the last minute.
Nope, that's what this section tries to prevent. But what about when the forms are just totally incompatible, like two completely different universes of contractual terms?
Yeah, what happens then? Does the court just throw up their hands and say, good luck, figure it out yourselves?
Not quite. That's where 2-7 swoops in. If those forms are just too different to reconcile, the court says, okay, let's take the parts everyone does agree on, and for everything else, we'll use the UCC's default rules. It's like a backup plan for contract terms.
So basic warranties, stuff like that, even if they weren't explicitly written in the contract?
You got it. But here's the plot twist. The court in Ionix actually had to overrule its own previous decision in a case called Rotolif.
Wait. They admitted they were wrong before? That seems unusual.
It does show you they're willing to adapt. In Rotolif, they had favored what's called the last shot doctrine. Basically, whoever sent the last form before the deal was done, well, their terms won. Kind of a rigid approach.
So was Elmwood trying to pull a last shot maneuver here with that conditional acceptance thing from 2207, hoping their limited liability clause would stick since their form was probably the last one sent?
Bingo! But the Ionix court wasn't falling for it. They could see what Elmwood was trying to do.
Trying to slip one by, eh? It does seem kind of unfair to let companies hide tricky clauses in mountains of paperwork and then expect the other side to catch every little detail.
Exactly. And that's why Ionix is so important. It marked a shift towards a fair system.
Yeah.
Using 2207.3, where those conflicting terms essentially cancel each other out.
No more sneaky advantages. Makes you wonder, how many contracts are out there right now with these ticking time bombs of conflicting terms just waiting to explode?
That's a great question, and one we'll explore as we dive deeper into the court's decision and what it means for everyone doing business. All right, so we're back and ready to untangle the rest of this Ionix case. Last time, we left those dueling contract terms kind of hanging in the balance.
Yeah, the court basically hit the reset button on those conflicting clauses.
Exactly, and now the big question is, what happens next? If both those clauses are out, what's left for Ionix?
Yeah, where do they go from here?
Well, that's where the UCC steps in again. Remember those gap fillers we mentioned?
Right, like the UCC's backup plan for contracts.
Exactly. And in this case, those backup rules were a game changer for Ionix.
Yeah.
Even though Elmwood tried to limit their liability with that sneaky clause, they were still bound by the UCC's implied warranties.
Implied warranties. Okay, for anyone who hasn't been to law school yet, what does that even mean?
Implied warranties are basically unspoken promises that come with every product. It's like when you buy a coffee maker, you kind of expect it to, well, make coffee.
Makes sense. It should do what it's supposed to do.
Right. You're not paying for a fancy paperweight. And these implied warranties, they're there even if they're not explicitly written out in the contract.
So it's a basic level of quality that's just assumed. A safety net for buyers.
You got it. And for Ionix, those implied warranties meant Elmwood was still on the hook if their thermostats were defective. No amount of legal maneuvering could completely erase that responsibility.
So Elmwood's attempt to dodge liability with that hidden clause, it totally backfired.
Big time. And this isn't just about one company or one contract. It has a ripple effect. The Ionix case sends a message to businesses. You can't just hide behind confusing legalese. Fairness and transparency matter.
So it's not just about winning the battle of the forms, but about playing by the rules, right?
Absolutely. And that's where the UCC comes in. It's like a tool, especially for smaller businesses who might not have armies of lawyers.
But how practical is all this in the real world? I mean, most people don't even know the UCC exists, let alone Section 2207.
You're right. Awareness is key. Just knowing that 2207 exists can give you leverage. You can push back against unfair terms, make sure you're not getting tricked.
So knowledge is power, as they say.
Exactly. Even a little bit of understanding about the UCC can help you navigate those tricky business deals.
Well, this is all super insightful, but did the Ionix case actually change how courts deal with these battle of the forms situations? Or was it just a one-off thing?
That's a great question. And to answer it, we need to look at the long-term impact of the Ionix decision. But first, let's unpack exactly how the court used those UCC default rules to reach their decision.
All right, so here we are, the final stretch of our deep dive into Ionix, Inc. v. Elmwood Sensors, Inc.
We've covered a lot of ground, that's for sure. From hidden clauses to the UCC stepping in to make things right.
Yeah, it really shows how something as seemingly boring as thermostats and water dispensers can unlock a whole world of contract law.
And how it affects businesses, big and small.
Absolutely. So as we wrap things up, let's talk about the impact of Ionix. Did it, like, revolutionize how courts handle these battle of the forms situations?
Well, maybe not a full-blown revolution, but definitely a major turning point. Before Ionix, that last shot doctrine was still pretty common.
Right. Whoever sent the last form basically won.
Exactly. Made things kind of unpredictable and risky, especially if you weren't super careful about reading every single line of those contracts.
So Ionix changed the game.
It did. By rejecting that last shot idea and going with a more nuanced approach using 2207.3, the court said, hey, fairness and clarity matter more than just who fired off the last piece of paper.
So it shifted the focus from just the technicalities of the forms to, like, the actual intention behind the deal.
Exactly. And that had a big impact. It influenced how courts all over the country started interpreting contracts, especially in these battle of the forms situations.
Pretty impressive legacy for a case about thermostats, huh? But how has Ionix changed how contracts are actually written these days? Are companies more careful about those conflicting terms now?
Oh, absolutely. Ionix was a wake-up call. Companies realized they couldn't just hide behind tricky language anymore.
So it's all about being upfront and making sure both sides know what they're getting into.
You got it. Clear communication, good faith negotiation, that's what it's all about. If there's something that could cause problems down the line, address it right away. And use language everyone can understand, not just lawyers.
Makes sense. But let's be real, most people don't have time to become contract law experts. So what can our listeners do to protect themselves in, you know, everyday situations?
That's a great point. Not everyone needs to go to law school for this. But here's the thing. Even knowing a little bit about UCC Section 2207 can make a huge difference. Just knowing it exists and how it can help you level the playing field, that's a big win.
So knowledge is power, right?
Exactly. And if there's ever something you're unsure about in a contract, don't be afraid to ask for help. Whether it's a lawyer, a mentor, even a friend who knows more about contracts than you do, a second opinion can be really valuable.
Great advice. So to sum it all up, when it comes to contracts, knowledge is your best friend. And the Ionix case shows us how understanding those key legal principles can really make a difference.
Absolutely. Even if you're not going to be a lawyer, These insights can help you navigate the world with a little more confidence. And make sure those contracts you're signing work for you, not against you.
That's a fantastic takeaway. And on that note, we'll wrap up our deep dive into the fascinating world of Ionix, Inc., via Elmwood Sensors, Inc.
Thanks for joining us on this legal adventure.
And remember, everyone, knowledge is power. Stay curious, stay informed, and stay contractually empowered.